money in the Aussie used car market. Top used cars, SUVs, and utes are worth more now than 18 months ago. Should you sell while the market remains red hot? Yes, it's time to strap in for another edition of the Cars Guide podcast, the show that takes you beyond the test drive. This is episode 193, Used Car Gold Mines. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James, and joining me in this money-making market assessment are Cars Guide Adventure Editor Crafty.
Hello.
And key contributor Steve.
G'day.
We'll open the BND roller door and peer into the far reaches of the Cars Guide garage in these COVID-constrained times, looking back on our hero cars and memorable drives. Then we'll dive into your feedback. YouTubers, you can plot your own adventure. You can jump ahead courtesy of the time codes in the notes below, and you can click on the chapter markers in the timeline. So let's hit the starter button. And yes, used cars. Byron, our own Byron through the week, wrote a very compelling story. Putting the proposition, could you be sitting on a gold mine? There's potentially easy money to be made, and it's sitting right on your driveway or in the garage. So he has been able to identify particular models that have been at the forefront of this market trend that we've seen, where because new cars are a little scarce, the used car markets come up with demand and the prices in parallel. So I don't know whether either of you guys are kind of casual scrollers or of the
used car.
You know, of certain websites, Crafty, not those, but, you know, with used cars for sale, much like our own, have noticed this trend. Are either of you aware? Have you been in the used car market lately?
I was looking for a car just before I got locked in my house, and I was looking about $10,000 to spend, and I could not find anything that I thought was worth the money. It was staggering how little you could get for $10,000. I really thought that would get me something. Yes. Something I didn't want to drive myself, but that, you know, I could use as a family car and maybe save up for my son to learn to drive in a couple of years. But $10,000 gets you nothing. And there are people out there making, you couldn't even negotiate with people making really good money on secondhand Polos, old i30s. I thought I could get a Mazda 3. Mazda 3 was way out of my budget. So I was shocked. Yes. So this story alarms me in that way, but more because one of my wise after the fact things was when the last VF Commodore came out, I said, if I had any money, which I've never had, if I had any money, I would buy one of these now and put it away because it will definitely be worth more. And people laughed at me, but it turns out I was right.
But, I mean, I suppose the assumption there was that it would have to be some kind of special model that would appreciate over time. But it's not. It's even your cooking variety, you know, ordinary Evokes and whatever. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to that.
It's everything, JC, and it's been obvious since the whole the global situation that we're currently in kicked off. It's not just real estate that has gone, bonkers. It's not the real estate market that has just gone bonkers. It's secondhand cars, and that was evidenced, early on last year, and things that you would expect that would, you know, resell pretty high, like, you know, any Toyota pretty much or Land Cruisers and that sort of thing that generally draw a high price tag secondhand. That's not the case anymore. It's everything. So everything has skyrocketed. I'm not in the market for a secondhand vehicle at the moment because I don't make the big bucks like Corby. But I keep an eye.
And that was my annual income I was willing to spend.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that's before tax.
Yes.
But I obviously keep an eye on it like everyone else, and we're part of that sort of realm. It's a big surprise because it's bucked the trend of pretty much everything else. And the other thing is people are locked in their areas, their regions, their states effectively. And so travel, you're pretty much limited to what you can do, you know, to what you can drive. So
I don't know, consuming overseas auto content, it's the same, I know, in the States and a lot of Europe. It'd be good to get feedback. I know we go to all points of the globe. So it'd be good to get people give us their stories from where they might be. But it's not just Australia, that's for sure, too.
No, not at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's if you guys agree, let's just look at some of the models that Byron called out as particular specials that you should probably be putting the for sale sign on. And actually to that, I'm sure you guys like me have got your local outdoor car yards where people tend to just park their cars and put the sticker in the window and say, this is how much it is. I've noticed the turnover in stock in those ones is very, very rapid. So yes. even the casual car yards are going. But the Toyota, you mentioned it, Crafty Toyota, pretty much a go-to in terms of resale value. But the RAV4, so the previous gen RAV4, 2013 to 2019, Byron's saying in early 2020, a clean ex-government or previous private owner, RAV4, two-wheel drive with around 100,000 kilometres on the clock started at $12,000 or from about 15 for the more desirable all-wheel drive.
Yeah.
Fast forward to today and you're looking at 18 and nearly 30 for an up-spec, you know, GXL or whatever. That's madness, isn't it?
It is. I mean,
it's a good car, but it's just crazy.
It's new car prices, isn't it? I mean, if you're looking at something, you know, to suit a smaller budget. And I mean, it's a good thing. It's a good vehicle. You're always going to get that Toyota tax, like I said, with a second-hand Toyota. It's always going to, you're always going to get bitten by that, and you sort of go into a purchase of a Toyota expecting that. But again, it's a whole new world in which we live. So
I thought the Toyota the Toyota tax is having no personality. I can't believe we live in a world in which a RAV4 is so desirable that people are paying that much money for it. You can see why I struggled with the 10 grand budget. It's not going to give me a RAV4 that I wouldn't want.
Absolutely.
Well, I wonder, is there a philosophical thing here where people are, there's a flight to certainty, you know, where in uncertain times you want something with a very strong reputation for reliability where you're not going to have problems going to dealers and things, and maybe Toyota is just one of those brands that people cling to when they're a bit uncertain.
I think so. For better or worse, they've still got that that reputation that harks back, you know, a long time ago. Some people say it's you know, they don't deserve it these days. Some people say, yep, it's still the, you know, the greatest thing around, a Toyota. So, you know, good luck to people. Nice. But geez, there's some big prices, huh?
Well, look. Steve, you touched on it before. The another that Byron's called out is the Commodore, being the VF Commodore. So the last locally, as in produced in Australia, Holden Commodore. You've got six figures, low kilometer SSs and HSVs, prove that those values are already there. But he's saying that it's just your garden variety Evokes and SV6 grades, if they're original and regularly maintained, they've bucked the decades-long trend of free-falling depreciation for Aussie sedans. They dipped below $10,000 in early 2020. They're now 15K minimum. The Sport Wagon, with fewer than 150K on the clock, that were 12,000 18 months ago, really fetch under 20 now. So they're on this upward trajectory, which again begs the question, is now a good time to offload it, or is there more in it? But it certainly backs up your VF Commodore thinking, Steve.
Well, it does dismantle our previous argument about reliability, though, doesn't it? Maybe people aren't that interested. No, I mean, I love that car. I remember driving and thinking it's such a shame that that we can't have cars like this anymore, and I remember thinking it'd be fantastic. It's a perfect family car for me. It's a perfect family car that was outside my budget. But even an SV6, I'd be happy with. It was just such a good thing. And I'm relieved to see the prices now currently where they deserve to be, I think. I'm surprised that they dropped as low as that. I wish I'd picked one up then if I'd been on it. But $10,000 would have been.
I mean, and the Sport Wagon. It's interesting Byron mentions the Sport Wagon because it is such a good-looking car. I'm like you. I thought the VF was a real triumph, a really good Aussie-made sedan, and the Wagon was just outstanding to look at. Really good job.
And that appeal to Australians, like you want, it should be a collector's item, you know, the last of its kind of thing. And it'll be, if you hold on for it long enough, you'll be able to sell that at someone else.
But you bought several, Crafty. I know that you squirreled a few away. You've got the eight.
That's right.
There's
all
kinds of
it. Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Yes. How many is Byron bought? How many of them is Byron bought?
That's Byron just sold one. He just sold.
Oh, really?
He just sold
one of
Wagon.
One of 38 that he has.
It's honest Matthew Darkus Motors. He's got. He's typically got the shipping container on the corner of his
just ready to go.
Special of the week up on the top of it. Yeah. Amazing.
I thought he never bought anything larger than like a Citroen or a Leaf. I can't imagine him as something that big. But there you go.
Well, he does buy newer cars. Yes, he had a Leaf. He had a Row 80. He had an NSU Row 80, I think. But he's got a Mazda 3. He's got all kinds of things. Now,
and he's obviously got too much disposable income.
Yes, well, journalism has worked out for him, Stubby.
It has. Yes, or maybe it's just a front.
Good on you.
It's the car dealing. It's the car dealing. That's how we make it.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
Honest Flipping Matthew Darkus Motors.
Yeah.
Now, Crafty, this is a good one for you to maybe take the lead on. It's a car that I've always had a soft spot for, which is the FJ Cruiser.
Mm.
And for what it's worth, when I first saw pictures of the FJ Cruiser, I thought it was Hummer size. I thought it was really a big oversized thing.
Yeah.
Not at all. Based on the Prado.
Yeah.
Lots of fun. And you could take it off-road. It's not a hardcore off-roader, but I can absolutely see the appeal. What about you?
Yeah, it goes pretty well. I mean, it is essentially a Prado with a sort of sexed up, you know, sexed up exterior. Mm. Very popular, kind of polarizing when they first came out, and Corby will take up that. But, you know, some people hated it. Some people loved it. I still see a lot of them around and actually, you know, off-roading. So, a lot of them kitted out with aftermarket gear. So people fully embracing the lifestyle. And I see a few of them, you know, around cities and suburbs and whatever that aren't so kitted out. A good thing, you know, and again, that old Toyota resale value, I mean, whether people will probably hold on to them because they're actually part of their family lifestyle and that sort of thing. Maybe there are some people out there with ones that haven't done a lot of Ks and ones that haven't been thrashed off-road.
Well, Byron's saying today they start at 35,000 with sky-high mileage, while examples with under 150K range from 40 to 55 grand.
New car FJs prices.
Advertised for nearly 70,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It cost under 50K when new. So maybe those are some of the customised ones you're talking about, the full Black Ops treatment,
but
that's staggering.
It is.
I don't know how you guess, Crafty, that I wouldn't like it, but you guessed correctly. My best mate's sister's bought one, and I've been telling her to sell it for years, so I might get it on the phone. Get rid of it. Hers is bright yellow. It looks like something the Banana Split should be driving. It's absolutely horrible.
Get her on the blower, mate. Get her to sell it.
So you can turn on the clock.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. One banana, two banana. Yeah.
At least it's interesting for a Toyota, but not interesting in a good way.
Yeah.
It was at the pointy end of that change for Toyota where they started to become more adventurous. You know, the FJ Cruiser, then you had the 86 and various, you know, that was all starting to come in.
Yeah,
it was a
bit
of a marker for that.
Yeah, but 86 was, is good. 86 is good. They have two ends of a different spectrum, I think. Man.
I did spend a little bit of time in an 86 once. It was fun. It was good.
They
fun.
Are great. Yeah. And closely related to like one of the cars coming up.
Like a go-kart.
True. Yeah. We do have a family member that's a bit of a canary in the coal mine for motion sickness, and I know the FJ Cruiser was a no-go zone for that person, particularly in the back seat. You've got
those
clamshell doors. You're feeling a bit closed in.
Bouncy. It is one of those real sort of cocoony, sort of narrow field of vision out the side when you're in the back there, and it feels a bit too snug.
The car that I just had a Honda Civic Type R recently, and it made everyone in my family car sick every time they went in it.
Oh, really?
It's not the car I'm getting out.
Yeah, that's just your driving though, mate. I mean,
but it was my driving. That's true.
Think you've been diesel.
Yeah, you're so hard on the brakes and then hard on the throttle and then it's like a washing machine effect.
Doesn't ride well either. No.
Oh, that too. Now, here's one which is right smack bang in the mainstream, which is the Mazda 3. So, again, we're talking 2014 to 20, so it's the previous generation. It was the first post-Ford version of the Mazda 3. And it's going gangbusters, up against the likes of Corolla, Civic, Focus, all of these mainstream brands. And Byron reckons autos with under 100,000 kilometres barely drop below 16 grand, rising to well over 20. For mid-spec grades, while exceptional examples of the luxuries and sports variants are still near 30 grand. So that's exceptional too. I mean, are we paying a Mazda tax or is that just emblematic of the broader market?
But can't you get a new one for 30 grand?
Pretty much.
I went to a Mazda dealer when I was doing this whole car research thing, and I went to a Mazda dealer thinking what I could get for 20-ish if you push the boat out, kind of thing, buy it as a company car or something. But Mazda actually have vehicles. You can get a Mazda 3, but the only one I could afford had a plastic steering wheel. I just couldn't live with that.
Do you normally buy cars on behalf of Corby Corporation or do you have it as a private vehicle?
I let the minions drive them. I don't drive them. I only drive Ferraris. But
Corby Corporation.
The minions need to drive something to get my lunch. But no, my...
Yeah.
My wife's madly in love with that Mazda 3. Like that, yeah. I love the current one. I think it's a fantastic looking thing. But people really love that previous generation, which is like pre-pretty. But her love for that car is just all about how it looks. But again, the problem that I've had with that car is that the kids don't feel – the kids get a bit car sick in the back because of the way the back windows go up. It's just about not being able to see out. Yeah, and the new one,
Yeah, so I know it's a polarized, it's a classic polarizing design. I'm in the really love it camp, but I get it. Other people, you know, the opposite.
Someone said they found it too masculine.
Too masculine? Really?
That was Tim Keane, actually. Our good friend Tim Keane said he found it too masculine.
Right. Well, I mean, Tim is pretty fluid in his gender identity. I don't know how that goes when it's transposed on the motor cars.
I don't think of it as masculine, I have to say. But I think it's beautiful. I think it's a great looking Alfa Romeo copy.
Yes. Yes. Now, well, it's not the first time for Mazda. I want to say, was it the Mazda 1600 in the 60s was originally going to be an Alpha? Anyway, people out there will know more than me and correct me on that. But
I doubt it.
Now,
those secondhand prices are crazy, aren't they?
Speaking about crazy, Crafty, this is one very close to your heart. Navara. Mm-hmm. You are a Navara owner. But
I am. Don't say it with so much venom, JC.
Matthew Darkus Motors has identified. Honest Matthew Darkus Motors has identified the D23 dual cab 4x4 as a particular hotspot. But he's saying a quick search for a sub 100,000 kilometre D23 dual cab means having to part with $30,000 and upwards, depending on grade and condition. While the smartly attired STX autos are currently nearing 40K plus. So where do you stand on that, Crafty? Does that represent solid value for a vehicle like that?
Well, you stand out the front with a for sale sign.
Well, I've got mine's even older, Corbs. Mine's 2009, so it's a D22. Wow. One of the much hated generation. Well, mine anyway, with the wheezy 2.5 litre turbo diesel. I'll be tacking $60,000 on that and putting
it. Does have the crafty. It has the crafty graphics pack as well. It's a crafty limited edition.
Yeah, which is basically just blood.
There's people out there who'd want to drive it. Pretty crafty.
It's like at the Bonhams auction, or you know, this is formerly the Marcus Craft Navara. Yeah,
exactly. The John Lennon Rolls Royce.
The Marcus Craft Navara.
It's a good unit, JC. Again, got its fans, got its haters. I'd expect that its sort of skyrocketing popularity would come off the back of perhaps some people not being able to get exactly what they want and sort of having, you know, they're knocking on to the next best thing or the third best thing in their list of vehicles that they want to get. Yeah. It's a good unit. And, you know, if you're going to start nitpicking, there are a few things, you know, that you might not like. I enjoy the things. They've made a decent four-wheel drive ute for a long time.
Yeah.
So again, those prices don't surprise me in the world in which we live right now.
Yep.
They'd be outrageous any other time.
Could this be a factor of, you know, we know that camper trailers and all of that stuff is going through the roof as well. People are holidaying domestically where they're able to. They're not flying overseas. They're spending their money on something to hitch up and put behind their vehicle, and they've discovered they need a tougher vehicle to do it.
Yeah. I'll give our Australian listeners the drum, mate. There are, you know, like the camper trailer and caravan market has been pretty much gutted by demand. And you'll drive around and you'll see camper trailer and caravan yards that are a bit bare bones and that sort of thing because, you know, now supply is a problem. But, and I give our listeners this tip, in Australia, wait a few months. I think people have bought into the idea of the lifestyle and then they realise, well, actually, I don't really like
sleeping.
It's crap. I don't like towing. I hate it, you know, blah, blah. And in a couple of months, there'll be a lot of brand new things on sale, perhaps for a little bit less than what they were purchased for.
Interesting.
So people trying to offload them. Because I see a lot of camper trailers and caravans, a lot of them new, sitting in people's front yards and not going anywhere. So, I'd expect that.
They're a bit like a boat, aren't they? I mean,
I was going to say.
They say the best 2 days you spend with your boat is the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Maybe it's a bit like that with your camper trailer.
Yeah. On the other hand, there are a lot of people who really do use them and really embrace the lifestyle. But yeah, I'd expect that a few people would realize that they're not fully sort of immersed in the lifestyle when they've spent a little bit of time with one. So
yeah. All right. Now we'll the last couple. HRV. Honda HRV. Here you go. Small SUVs are all the rage in the new car market. So you're talking circa 2015 type HRV. They're going through the roof. A low mileage version can fetch nearly $25,000. They're hot property on the secondhand scene, says dealer principal Matthew Darkus.
Honest
Byron. You know, come into my office while we discuss the finances. It's normal patter. I can get you in this car for money you wouldn't believe.
it's unimaginable to me that you couldn't do something more interesting with $25,000 than that.
Yeah.
But I think it's the reliability thing again, bomb-proof, it'll go forever. But, yes, it doesn't seem like an exciting decision. Whereas the one car we've got left is the one that makes sense to me, but this one not so much.
Because here you're talking maybe it's Qashqai, CX-3, Suzuki Vitara. There are other options if you're in this neck of the woods, and I suppose they've all appreciated as well. But
none of those are ugly.
Well, let's cut to the chase. Let's get to the finish line on this one. And it's the Subaru BRZ. And I'm sure that the Toyota 86 would be in a similar boat, but Byron has picked on the BRZ. And he said that, with under 2 years ago, with under 80,000 kilometres on the clock, they could be had for about $15,000, depending on the spec. Today, the same cars kick off from 23 and 25. He was also talking about the MX-5. Would have been about 18. So now you're talking 23 and 25 respectively. I suppose when they first arrived, people thought these might be classics, in time to come. These would be cars that would be sought after by enthusiasts down the track. It's just that's been fast forwarded to 2021.
But this thing makes perfect sense to me. Like now you can't go overseas, you can't have that holiday. It's the toy you've always wanted to buy yourself. Let's buy a car that I can have just for pure driving joy. And I love the 86, but I'd have the Subaru just because the Subaru badge just makes me happier. And drive them back to back, there really is very little difference, but they're both fantastic cars. And I'd have an MX-5 for the same reason, just for pure driving joy. It's the you can't have a Porsche because they're too expensive. You can have this and it gives you a percentage of that same driving
crafty
feel,
you you rented one to impress people at your school reunion. that was the time you were in the
86. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. Took me about half an hour to get out of the thing, in and out.
I was about to say, was there butter and oil involved?
Pretty, as there always is, Corby,
In general. I had one for a year as a company vehicle in my life. Yeah. And I got to say...
As an erotic dancer.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. No, yeah. I actually ran the club. And the... Toyota's decision to put those they're not high performance tyres by any stretch. They're more kind of eco high mileage type Michelins, I think they are, made it just so exciting to drive because even at around town speeds, you could feel it moving and you were really connected with the car, which always made me scratch my head when people would put the big rubber on and a 1 inch up in rims was always a standard kind of thing. I enjoyed it on the standard tyres because at the slower speed, you could really get in tune and have fun with the car. I agree.
It's that car, that and the MX-5, is a car you can have fun at legal speeds. You don't need to be going fast to feel, to feel like you're alive.
Great little like snick-snack gearbox. Fantastic. All right, well, that's good. If any of you out there have had experience with those cars or others, let us know where you stand. Maybe you've just realised that the vehicle that's in your driveway should be wearing a for sale banner at Honest Matthew Darkus Motors. I know he'll sell it on consignment. Typically, he's happy to take a small commission. So let us know.
He only takes an 85% commission, doesn't he? It's quite reasonable.
It's reasonable. It's probably industry standard.
For him anyway, yeah.
If you're in Sydney, you may as well sell now because you don't need to replace it because you can't drive anywhere anyway.
You can't
sell now, replace in 6 months.
Forget Toyota. Everybody's car is perfectly reliable because they're not going anywhere. Yeah, 100%, 100% reliable. Now, we are going to go to our garage, but because, as we've hinted at, in Australia, in Sydney in particular and other parts, sadly, we're in a COVID-enforced lockdown. And I, for one, I know Steve's in a different place, but I, for one, haven't been doing much driving. I've been stuck at home, still working hard, which is great, and I'm very grateful for that, but not driving as much. So came up with a bright idea to maybe touch on our hero cars or a hero drive experience that sticks in your mind. And Steve, it's clear where you're going with this because it's actually sitting behind you. Please tell us about it.
Oh, I hadn't noticed.
That's not bright. I wish it was in my garage, I tell you. So that's the KTM Crossbow, which is a car made by a motorcycle company. Now, my love of motoring goes back to being a motorcycle enthusiast to start with. So for me, this car is everything I could want from a car because it makes me feel like I'm driving a motorbike. It's got no windows, no doors, no space to put anything, no stereo and no driving aids whatsoever, no ABS, no traction control. You can actually see the tires when you're in it. You can see the suspension working and it is absolutely terrifying. But if you drive behind anything, rocks fly into your face, you get smashed by stuff. it is visceral. People who are wussies wear helmets when they're driving it, but that's and even better, when Chesto drove it after me, it poured rain.
There's an epic footage of him trying to speak to a camera while he's being drenched.
It made me so happy. He turned up at my house and poured himself out of it like a
drowned rat. Like a waterfall.
We found out it's got little holes drilled in it for the water to drip out after it fills up. Because I had the day before, it was sunny. It was probably one of the greatest days driving I've ever had.
What is the engine then? It's not a motorcycle.
It's an Audi S3. It's an Audi S3 engine and an Audi S3 gearbox.
How light is that thing?
It weighs about as much as a bar, so you can pick it up. Yeah. You can pick it up, tuck it under your arm, and take it home.
Wow!
I destroyed the power to weight by taking Boris Mihailovich, who's a giant motorcycle outlaw, in it,
big bloke,
to see if I could impress him. But he never liked a car before, but he liked that one.
He liked
In left hand corners, it would be like having a sidecar. You could actually get into a left hand corner much harder.
Yeah.
You're also sitting quite uncomfortably close. You have to kind of rub hands every time you change gears. It's a bit
that's nothing unusual for you, mate. You and Boris.
Awkward.
Not usually with Boris.
Fantastic. And look, is it still a new car available in the Aussie market? Do you know?
I just contacted them the other day to get that photo and you can still buy one. Yes.
All right. Okay. Fantastic.
And amazing, you can actually drive it on the road. Like, it looks like something we could only take to racetracks. And really, its core goal is as a track car. You can legally drive it on the road.
If you were to move your head slightly, is there like a vestigial windscreen of any description or nothing?
No windscreen at all. No, no windscreen. So everything just smashes you in the face. Particularly rain.
Really odd. I would have thought there'd be some ADR that demanded a windscreen, but not so.
No. There's several parts of it that look like they probably shouldn't pass ADR. Look at the mirrors. The mirrors are just sort of tacked on as an afterthought.
Fantastic.
But yes. And it sounds amazing as well because the whole thing just vibrates around you. You can't
It wouldn't cause any interest on the road at all. It's a sleeper. Oh. You know, it's really a cue sheet. You'd have no idea.
People threw things into the cabin at me, but that happens all the time, too.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. Now, Crafty, an unlikely marker for you.
Yeah,
please,
for me.
Please fill us in on your recent hero drive, hero vehicle.
Yeah, well, I could come up with a sort of expected one, like a 70 series or a Jimny or a
on the stress leggy track
Rubicon or something like that. But my sort of most recent mind blowing vehicle was a Tesla X. Believe it or not, we did it, and this was probably about 2 years ago. Malcolm Flynn kindly invited me on a tow test. With a Tesla X and a Land Cruiser 200 series. So, you know, a decent towing platform in its own right and by reputation, the 200. The Tesla X, I'd only ever had limited experience and never towing something, never under load in an electric vehicle. And, my God, I was blown away. I think it's 650 Newton meters at the foot. And so incredibly quiet. the caravan wasn't massive, JC. It was probably about 1,800 kilograms, but, you know, probably about the, you know, similar to what people these days will tow as a recreational van. You know, it's not a horse float or anything like that. But we went up from Penrith out to Bathurst, so about 160 k's.
Few hot laps of Mount Panorama.
That's correct. Yeah, well, we did go. Yeah, we did dip our tires onto that for a little bit as part of the loop.
You've got it.
The range not so good. I think by the time we got to Bathurst with that 1,800 keg caravan on, we only had about 70 k's left in the Tesla.
Hmm.
And the Land Cruiser had another, I think it was 400 k's. In the tank estimated, but that wasn't the point, mate. The point is sort of pure, unadulterated, quiet, immediate towing power. Like it just blew me away. Like and this was up, you know, some of those decent hills through the Blue Mountains. We came back on the Bell's Line of Road, great, unbelievable, and fantastic. Just. Yeah. To me, was the most sort of instant and immediate, sort of gave me an idea of the future. And I can't wait for sort of EV four-wheel drives, EV off-roaders to be done properly and to be in our market, because if that was any indication of sort of towing ability and, you know, sheer fun as a driving experience too. Build quality, pretty dodgy.
But, what do you think of the doors? To say the least, do you like the doors?
Pretty.
I think
crazy.
Crafty hung onto one for too long and actually lifted himself.
I did, yeah.
Out of the car.
Yeah.
But
you know, once all that technology is sorted out and is more accessible, you know, in terms of budget for people, it's just going to open up the world to a whole bunch of other possibilities. So yeah, a lot of fun, a little bit unusual for me, not an off-roader, you know, by definition, that thing, but just a good indication of the
unreal
future,
that's a really good one. That is a great one. Thank you, Crafty. Now I'll finish it off. This is a really rare car. It's Australian built, called the Giocattolo, Group B Giocattolo, and it is actually a mid-engined 5-litre Group A V8 sports car, 5-speed ZF, rear-wheel drive. Now, I've got a little collection in a cabinet at home. For people on YouTube, you'll always see it. I call it 50 Great Automotive Experiences or something like that. Not necessarily great cars, but just, you know, and I can sit in front of that cabinet. They're all 1/43rd die-cast and just think back to particular things that I did. It's really fun to do that. And this car's in there. It's in the 50. But if one goes in and one has to come out, it's like a rolling 50 of really good automotive experiences. I drove this car in early 1988. It was created by a guy called Paul Halstead. A lot of our viewers and listeners will know all about it. He had a retail outlet in North Sydney called The Toy Shop from 1985 to 88. And he sold exotic sports cars. He had a big connection with Di Tommaso and what have you. Then he started this car company, Giocattolo, in 1988, lasted till 1990. He's still around and still has a W16 supercar project kicking around somehow. He built a supercharged 427 HSV GTO, which became a show car. The name for this car, Giocattolo, name means toy in Italian, so that's the toy shop connection. It was likely inspired by this Alfa Sud Sprint 6C that Alfa itself built as a Group B rally prototype in the early 80s. Barty set up a factory in Caloundra on the Sunshine Coast and made 15 of them. The intention was to make just under 100 per year. That didn't come to pass. But these little Alfa Sud Sprints in standard form had a 1.5-litre front engine driving the front wheels. This Giocattolo had a 5-litre mid-engined rear driving the rear wheels. And this was a Group A engine out of the Walkinshaw, you know, Batmobile Group A. But Holden's Engine Company, which was then a fairly entrepreneurial business trying to sell engines to the world, did him a special version with forged pistons and different lifters and bigger injectors and a tune, and it had extra power and no rev limiter. So it revved to 6,100 RPM. It had a ZF gearbox, not the BorgWarner that was in the Group A. The body was completely restructured. The rear suspension was done by a bloke called Barry Locke, who had experience with McLaren in F1 and IndyCar, it was 385 kilos lighter than that Group A. The bonnet, the front guards, the bumpers, the bulkhead between the engine and the two seats was in Kevlar. There was plans for it to be carbon. It had Brembo brakes, Simmons wheels with big Pirelli P0s on it, Momo wheel, Recaro seats, and a flask of Bundy rum in the toolkit in case everything was pear-shaped. And that was famously because it was from Queensland. But it was just the most amazing car. You always have these dreams of little car, big engine. That was this to the power of three or four. And I was at Modern Motor magazine at that stage as a junior burger and got the chance to drive the car, keep it overnight. We had it for photography, and it was quite something. At the time, talk about the crossbow, drawing attention, this thing did as well. It looked fantastic to my eyes, looked dramatic. And I know that of the 15, sadly, a couple have gone by the by, but most of them are treasured kind of very rare possessions. So that's one that sticks out for me.
Did it break traction a bit? Was it a bit hairy?
Well, what I did find is if you leaned into the brake pedal, you know, if you wanted to, oh, this corner's coming up, I'll push it through this corner and lean, it wasn't as stable as you'd like it to be under braking. So now that's generally a suspension sorting thing. It's quite a short wheelbase, you know, for having the engine in the middle. But yeah, well, it was able to break traction, Steve. But not that I recall anyway. It's a while ago now, and it was a pretty rare and expensive car. When it was first mooted, the story that Barry Lake, the then editor of Modern Motor, wrote, said it was going to be 60,000 or 79, and then it got to 92, and then the business was just not viable, and it went into administration. So a bright burst, but it didn't last all that long.
But so there's very few of the actual car, but you've got a model of it.
Yeah, I've got a model of it. And people on YouTube, it's from France, of all people.
Wow.
Incredible. So a car that 15 examples of which were built, there's a 1/43rd resin die-cast of the car. Wow.
They're probably more really accurate. Those than the actual car. Yeah.
It's even right-hand drive. The model is right-hand drive of this alpha-based thing. So it's in the collection. But it's not about cars, that collection. There's a tractor in there and all kinds of things. But that's one of them, and it really stands out as a strong memory.
Cool.
Awesome. All right, now let's move on to a bit of feedback from last week. And last week we were talking about the fact that Chesto had unearthed a sneaky trademark application from GMSV for Z06, your preference in terms of how you pronounce it. So an even wilder version of the mid-engine, talk about mid-engine V8s, the Corvette C8, that isn't a thing even in the States yet, but it looks like it's headed our way. So Lofty Vision, and I was going to say Lofty, hope Lofty Junior's in good shape, has been a big V8 fan for a long time, but has a big announcement. He's got a new GR Yaris, and he wouldn't have a V8 again. Too much weight and power, small and nippy is a lot more fun. And that's, I don't know, Steve, I'm presuming you've driven the GR Yaris. I don't know about you, Crafty, but that's one of my, it's in the collection. By the
is
way,
it? Yes, yeah, absolutely.
It made an entrance to the collection last year. It is absolutely fantastic. So I
booked in another one just so I could drive it again. I made up some ridiculous excuse so I could borrow it again. Oh, I think I need to drive it again.
It is superb. So congratulations on that, Lofty. And Roto Ihu says no one buys a C8 for US 60K. We're talking about what it might cost here and what it costs in the States. Before COVID market craziness, average transaction price was close to 80K, and now even secondhand-based C8s are making 100K plus.
Whoa.
Chesto wondered if Aussie pricing and dinosaur tech will impact sales. GMSV locally said the C8 is already a sellout, and Roto's prediction is that the Z06, if and when it arrives, will be a 250K car, and GMSV will sell every unit and get its hands on. So that's his bold prediction.
God, that's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money, but it's a half-price Lambo, you know, or is it a high-price muscle car? You know, it just depends on what your perspective is.
I don't think it's a half-price Lambo, but I've never driven a Corvette. I must admit, I'm very excited.
Yeah. I remember driving it. Well, there's ZR1 King of the Hill in the collection, the first generation ZR1. Anyway, Bill Catapotis says, that vet may be a cool car to drive or even own, but I can't warm to buying a car from a company that's treated the people of this country with contempt.
Wow.
It's all too little and too late. So many better things to do with a couple of hundred K, I reckon. And he actually adds that he enjoys the podcast. Keep up the work, guys. Thank you very much, Bill. Much appreciated. And Lofty Visions agreed, GM's a dead brand in Australia. That's a very strong sentiment amongst people that are still feeling the pain of Holden having been, killed off in Australia. It's a very
people that angry about Mitsubishi Magna as well. Like, they can get fired.
No, the 380, the final
380 of them. Yeah.
Oh, I wonder what 380s are bringing in the second-hand market. They must be through the roof.
Perhaps not the same level of passion, mate. Perhaps.
Perhaps not. No.
As you Navara people. Yes. Then Senior Bob, g'day Senior, says, Andrew, referring to Chesto, we know EVs are fast. Richard nails it. Now, Richard said that EVs actually stick a hole through your body and suck out your soul.
Wow.
That's how he approaches EVs.
Yeah. Yep.
And Senior agrees. EVs suck out every bit of passion true car guys have. Hate EV Greta. Now, I imagine he's referring to Greta Thunberg there.
Yeah.
I hate EV Greta-driven quiet cars, even though the fast ones narrow the vanishing point. I talked about how a really fast car causes your peripheral vision to disappear. And he says, by the way, what a great movie. And I don't know whether you guys have seen Vanishing Point. Kowalski.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Drive a Taycan and told me, a Porsche Taycan told me that there's no passion in that car. You got to be kidding.
Good call.
That's a hell of a thing to drive.
Good call. Yes. And it looks amazing too. Mm. Now, Andrew D, Chesto cops another survey. And I did give him right a reply. I said, do you want to return serve? But haven't heard anything from him so far.
What?
Electric cars are coming. Get off the grass, Chesto. Sure, eventually they'll become a bigger part of the landscape. But, mate, snails are moving faster than our take-up of EVs in Australia. And then Andrew actually quotes your story, Steve, from some time ago. 20,000 EVs since 2011, hardly an impact or footprint, he says. 1 million new cars a year, which is what we sell in Australia, vehicles roughly a year. And EV take-up is 0.7% of the market. England and Europe sitting at 10% take-up. He says, yeah, Chicken Little, the sky is falling. Sell your dinosaur V8s now. Emoji, screaming emoji. I'm with Richard. Until Australia gets its act together, being massive infrastructure investment to cater for such EVs, plus massive incentives for us to do so by the federal government and state governments, we're just a backwater. So it feels like the feds are sort of turning their head towards EVs and making some small moves, but I have to agree with him in the totality of it. We're nowhere near it.
But is there an emoji for a whole country with its head stuck in the sand like ostriches? Because like the figure you need to look at, the number you need to listen to is 2026. Now, how close is 2026? That's 5 years away. Audi will not build a car with an engine. They're not going to build a car with an engine after 2026. It's 5 years. Mm. And when other car companies start saying the same thing, we can not want them as much as we like, but what are we going to buy? When people stop making them, it's going to get...
That's right. I remember there was a comedian in the States who said he'd cop some flack for photos of him in the 70s wearing flared pants, and he said, that's all you could buy. There weren't any other kinds of pants in the store. So have a go at me all you like, but that was what was available. I mean,
we can talk about our choice and our desires as much as we like and what we want to drive, but if you can't buy one, it's going to get real tough.
Yeah. All right. Now, Sukhoi Romantic, the person who loves fast Russian fighter jets, he said he saw on the Smoking Tire podcast, and I've got to say I'm a bit of a Matt Farah fan, that's Zach Clapman, he did a hydrogen trip. We were talking about hydrogen power as a potential for particularly heavy vehicles as a good way around the replacement of diesel. And in the explainer, Zach said that you have to wait for the hydrogen tanks to repressurize to get decent flow to refuel after another car's gone through. So convenience of not having to wait like an EV car disappears if you're second in the queue. He liked the car, that is Zach, liked the Nexo, but it sounded like a shit show. And I've got to say that with some recent experience of refueling hydrogen cars, he's absolutely right. And Grudland74 says, hydrogen fuel cell definitely has a future in Australia, the trucking industry, where the fueling stations are tricky to set up. You basically have to have the plant and station in one. It's an economy of scale problem. And he says, our own CSIRO has discovered a way to transport hydrogen in ammonia mix like normal fuel. And I'll get onto that in a minute. But he's right. We were fueling up some hydrogen cars. The story will be forthcoming soon. And a car had just beat us to it when we arrived. And we had to wait for the system to recharge itself and cool down such that we could refuel another car. Now, that will inevitably improve, I suspect, as if and when take-up increases, but it is definitely a factor right now. Have either of you guys driven a fuel cell vehicle?
Yeah, I recently had the Nexo, and it could only be, when it arrived, I thought I couldn't work out what had happened with the range, but apparently with the fuel filling station at Hyundai, they only have enough pressure to fill it up to halfway.
Halfway, yes.
So I could only have half the range, but it's one of those things where we could fix it, and if we do fix it and hydrogen becomes the future, Australia actually has the potential to be the Saudi Arabia of hydrogen.
Yes.
We've got these massive, massive things kicking off in WA and so on that, as you say, the ability to move it and transport it. There's another company in Australia that's working on being able to store hydrogen in pods at your house, so you could turn solar energy into hydrogen that you can then keep and run your house on it, run your car on it. All that seems a very... fantastical, but it's not that long ago that I thought EVs were fantastical.
Yes, well, that's true. I mean, further to Grudlin's point about the transport of it, the head of CSIRO, Dr. Larry Marshall, who I must say was in my year at school, Balgala Boys High, all the way. So he and I know each other. I've got friends, in high places.
He wishes he had your job. Yeah.
It's actually how far some of us have come. It's called a very Aussie name, called hydrogen cracker technology, and it turns, quote, gaseous hydrogen into liquid ammonia and back again. The membrane in this technology separates ultra-high purity hydrogen from ammonia while blocking all other gases. It links hydrogen production, distribution, and delivery in the form of a modular unit, which I think is what you were talking about, Steve, that can be used at or near a refueling station. So this sounds like something of a breakthrough on hydrogen.
I interviewed the guy, the head of the Hydrogen Council last week, and he's saying that the future is you'll have your EVs for city cars, but you want to go longer distances in Australia there and heavy vehicles and even so trucks, trains, heavy vehicles, marine, all hydrogen, and even things like SUVs. So your SUV would be, that would be hydrogen, fuel cell on board, fast refueling, longer range, but in cities, EVs. And it kind of makes sense, but it does seem that the infrastructure problem is enormous.
Because to your point, Crafty, with the Model X and towing, the thing about hydrogen, one of the benefits potentially, is that you have the electric motor, but you don't have to carry an enormous battery. The hydrogen tank is comparatively small, and the load of hydrogen that you need for a decent range is only, maybe it's 10 kilos.
Yeah,
is how much you need. So
and at the moment, with the technology as it is, the batteries are heavy by their very nature. So, so add to your load without actually loading anything in, before you go anywhere, it's already quite heavy.
Now, to finish it off, Stuart Marler says, "Stop teasing us about the missing two cylinders in the Outback." And I was talking about having driven the Outback last week. It's not a flat six; it's a flat four. Well, Boxer, technically. And that's good, Stuart. You're the only one that fell for it when I was talking about this. Well done. I can only say that it was muscle memory. I'm so used to that Outback as a six-cylinder car. Anyway, so well spotted. Thank you. And with that, we have reached the finish line. And I want to say thank you, Steve. And thank you, Crafty.
Oh, thanks very much, mate. No, thank you. And thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Crafty.
And thanks to our lead document shredder, master juggler, and pancake guru, Mr. Pritchard, for his commitment to the Cars Guide podcast cause. Today, he's wearing a T-shirt saying, "In dog beers, I've only had one." Manga shorts and Subway footlong Velcros. Amazing shoes. They look delicious. Jump into the conversation, Cars Guides on Facebook and Instagram, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. Apple Podcast listeners, please take a moment to rate and review the show. 5 stars would be great, but rating and reviewing really helps other people find the podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, make sure to subscribe to the Cars Guide YouTube channel so you can stay on top of all our latest content. But before we go, two blokes on the same country road approaching a rickety wooden bridge from opposite directions. So only wide enough for one car, and sure enough, they both go for it, arriving at the bridge at the same time and meeting in the middle. First bloke sticks his head out the window and yells, "I don't make way for idiots." Second guy rolls his window down and shouts back, "I do," as he starts reversing off the bridge.
good stuff.